listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Power of Doubt. The Martial Arts, Critical Thinking, and Scientific Skepticism. Part 1. Have you ever taken someone's advice about something having to do with the martial arts, or for that matter, having to do with anything else, and later regretted it? Maybe they convinced you to train with an instructor who later turned out to be wrong for you. Maybe it was about a certain martial art, telling you that it was either good or bad. Maybe it was about a certain technique, again, either good or bad. When you realized that your friend's advice was faulty, did you blame him or her? Perhaps you deserved some blame for not being more skeptical. Well-developed critical thinking skills can save you from lots of mistakes. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you may have heard me refer at one time or another to skepticism, or to scientific skepticism, or to myself as a skeptic. What exactly is skepticism? There are many interesting ways to describe it. One is that it is a lifelong search for the truth through the learning and use of critical thinking skills and the scientific method, combined with a profound sense of humility through the realization that the very instrument you're using to help pursue the truth, your imperfect human brain, is plagued with weaknesses that litter the path to the truth like landmines. A less poetically complicated definition might be that skepticism is a set of cognitive tools designed to enhance critical thinking, or in another sense, a set of weapons for helping to defend yourself from being deceived, scammed, or bamboozled by one of many different species of con artists or misguided true believers in magic. A skeptic is less likely than others to waste precious resources like money, time, or energy on get-rich-quick schemes, joining a cult, or falling down the various rabbit holes of pseudoscience. In that way, skepticism is a form of self-defense. Aside from that, what does skepticism have to do with the martial arts? The truth is that it's a helpful philosophy for any human endeavor. People make truth claims all the time in the martial arts, but people also make truth claims all the time about all the other facets of human existence. But more about that later. For now, it might be useful to describe what skepticism is not. It is not an attitude. It's not a position that you stake out and try to defend. It may seem that way to some of you, perhaps because some skeptics you have met before were also imperfect human beings, and some of them may have imperfectly represented their philosophy. If you know someone who is simply negative, who reflexively denies any assertion, this does not make him or her a skeptic. The word contrarian would come much closer to describing this person. A contrarian, by definition, is resistant to persuasion. A skeptic is only resistant to persuasion without sufficient evidence. Perhaps some contrarians are actually frustrated skeptics who are too lazy to actually investigate before denying. Because a skeptic is, above all else, an investigator, a researcher. A skeptic is also not the same as a cynic. A cynic believes that all people are motivated by selfishness. A skeptic is a bit more idealistic than that, but works at being less vulnerable to the manipulations of the people who are that selfish. A good skeptic is a global skeptic, meaning that he or she is not selective about the subject to which he or she applies the skepticism. On the other hand, some people label themselves as a particular type of skeptic. For example, you might hear someone say something like, "I'm a moon landing skeptic." That's not a skeptic in the sense of the word as I use it. Despite what some people may label themselves, by my definition, it's not possible to be a skeptic about some things and not a skeptic about others, and truly call yourself by that label. This type of person is not a skeptic. He or she is a denier. Frequently, when people are talking with each other, one of them will make what skeptics call a truth claim. Maybe someone's trying to sell you something. Maybe someone wants to recruit you for their group or organization, perhaps for their martial arts academy or association. Maybe someone is trying to convince you to vote a certain way. Or maybe someone is trying to convince you to agree with a belief that they have, like the belief that Bigfoot exists, or that the Earth is regularly visited by aliens, or the belief that vaccines cause autism, or that the moon landing was a hoax, or the belief that the attacks of 9/11 were a hoax, or that climate change is a hoax. Skepticism helps you to more accurately evaluate such claims. Skeptics are often accused of not being open-minded. In reality, being open-minded is an important and integral part of being a skeptic. As a matter of fact, good skeptics are more open-minded than most people. They are ready to accept any good evidence from any source without the filter of ideology or belief. Still, a skeptic wag once commented that it is important to keep an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out. A common phrase that practitioners of skepticism hear is, "Why do you always have to be such a skeptic?" The way such a question is worded betrays ignorance of what a true skeptic really is. When faced with this question, what a skeptic hears is, "Why can't you accept what I'm saying without evidence?" That's almost as jarring to the ears of a skeptic as, "Why do you always have to practice good hygiene?" A good skeptic stands exactly in the center between those on the one extreme who gullibly accept every truth claim they hear, and those on the other extreme who refuse to be open to any truth claim, even one that is accompanied by very strong evidence. Skeptics are often accused of being overly negative and of having a dark, dreary way of looking at the world, of being total buzzkills. Most of the people who I know that identify as skeptics are quite the opposite. They tend to be smart, playful people with outrageous imaginations, full of wonder, and exhibiting a childlike awe at the staggering possibilities of the natural world. Most of them think it would be totally cool if there really were Bigfoots or UFOs, and have felt that way since their nerdy childhoods. It's simply the fact that they have now grown up and have learned to discipline their thoughts with critical thinking skills, and as a result, would like to see real evidence before accepting a truth claim. In this podcast series, I frequently touch on the theme of the imperfect human brain. In episode 55, entitled "Trust Your Instincts?" with a question mark, I discussed how, while some of our natural impulses are still appropriate and even useful in the modern age, many other human instinctive impulses are now inappropriate or even toxic and destructive. Lest I give you the impression that I think the human brain suffers from more negative aspects than positive ones, though, let me clarify and say that the human brain is capable of amazing cognitive feats. It's simply the case that most people never attempt them. One of these amazing features of our brains is the ability to think about what we are thinking and feeling, and why we are thinking it. This may only be true of our species. It's called metacognition, and I have stated before that I think it's almost like a superpower. This amazing ability is at the heart of skepticism. Unfortunately, as I said, the vast majority of us never consider the quality or the rationality of our own thoughts. For most of us, the closest we come is to think something like, "It must be right. I'm thinking it." In the words of Socrates, however, an unexamined life is not worth living. If you ask most people if they would rather simply believe something without evidence, or instead be convinced with conclusive evidence, I'm sure that most of them would sensibly say that they want to see the evidence. But when you draw their emotions into the transaction, things change, and not for the better. Emotions can be a two-edged sword. Early in our evolution, the development of emotions surely helped to speed up decision-making in certain situations and were thus adaptive and necessary for survival. We are genetically predisposed to follow our emotions. Fear helps us to avoid predators. Disgust helps to avoid disease from rotting flesh and fecal material. The emotion of lust is sexual attraction that helps to ensure that your genes will be passed on to another generation. Frequently, when we satisfy an emotional need, our brain rewards us with a little squirt of dopamine, a neurotransmitter that contributes to a feeling of pleasure and satisfaction. That makes our emotions even more powerful to us, almost like a drug to which we are addicted. But our emotions can cause us to make faulty snap judgments, to form quick beliefs, instead of the more prudent course of investigating before making decisions. There are many occasions when it's quite understandable that humans become emotional. But there are also situations where humans become emotional for less than useful reasons. We tend to instinctively and irrationally distrust, have no patience for, or even to hate complexity, lack of control, meaninglessness, and fallibility. Let's look at these one at a time. Our hatred of complexity probably stems from the fact that, for our distant ancestors, taking the time for deep thought could often get you killed. Prey animals do not survive long if they make a habit of deep thought. Millions of years later, we still have an inherent distrust of subtlety and nuance. This distrust pushes us to seek simplistic descriptions of, and simple solutions for, complex modern problems. This leads to the development of bad mental habits, one of which is the overuse of crude mental shortcuts, which are called heuristics in the discipline of psychology. Heuristics can be known by many other names: rules of thumb, educated guesses, common sense, or stereotyping would be some of them. Heuristics can be helpful when quick thinking is necessary, such as when playing sports, or in automobile traffic, or when fighting for your life. I make extensive use of heuristics when I teach the martial arts. When you're fighting, sparring, or rolling, you need to be able to make quick decisions. Heuristics are a fantastic tool under these circumstances. But when complex problems in the rest of your life arise, heuristics can get you into real trouble. A skeptic learns to perceive when deep thought is appropriate, and when quick and dirty guesswork is the way to go. Humans also hate to feel out of control. This is a terrifying feeling for any of us. It probably is the major reason why many people would rather drive than fly on a commercial airliner, despite the fact that the airliner is statistically far safer. They don't like the combination of being 30,000 feet off the ground and not being the one in control of the plane. Our hatred of lack of control can lead to superstitious beliefs. Superstition is an attempt to gain some control over the universe by feeling that you can game the system with what essentially amounts to magic. You might call your particular brand of magic luck, positive energy, angels, or chi. This sense of gaining some control is one of the reasons why humans are prone to magical thinking. Astrology is an excellent example of using pseudoscientific magical thinking in an attempt to predict and influence outcomes in your life. The thought of a world without this kind of magic is frightening to many people. Martial artists are athletes, and athletes are notoriously superstitious. An athlete trains hard to try to cover all the bases for which he or she can prepare. All of the things for which one cannot prepare, in other words, random elements, are where he or she often tries to fill in with superstition, like wearing lucky boxing gloves, or executing a ritual to protect the competition area from bad luck, or wearing some sort of good luck charm. Humans also crave what they perceive as meaning in their actions and in their lives. The more we learn about the vastness of the universe and the great depths of time, the more this vastness frightens many people. The more unimportant and insignificant we seem to feel compared to near infinite space and time, the more such thoughts can sap our will to go out and live life to its fullest. Many people's egos and overdeveloped senses of self cannot handle the thought that the universe doesn't give a rat's ass about what you do with your life. When evaluating a truth claim, a common human failing is to gravitate towards the answer that lends more of what we perceive as meaning to important events, or our own existence. This is the kind of thinking that leads to conspiracy theories. Major events like the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the attacks of 9/11, or the deaths of beloved celebrities spawn many conspiracy theories for exactly this reason. It gives a greater sense of meaning to events and to our lives if a grand conspiracy was behind some major event rather than statistical randomness. More meaningful, however, does not necessarily mean more accurate. But cheer up. We all make our own meaning by not wasting the time that our life is made up of. Live every day to the fullest. Humans also really despise fallibility. Another reason why we are drawn to forms of magical thinking is that many of the real-world ways of doing things are limited by the fallibility of the humans who practice them. Doctors are fallible humans. They are extremely well-trained, but can make mistakes, sometimes with tragic consequences. As a result, many people seek out the magical pseudo-perfection of alternative medicine. The police department may fail to solve a crime or to catch a dangerous criminal, leading some to seek out the advice of so-called psychics. You may feel that your martial arts instructor or style has failed you in one way or another, and as a result, you seek out instruction elsewhere, which is fine. But all too often, the search for something different leads one to train in a style that claims to develop the famous alleged internal energy known as chi. In other words, your emotional human brain just led you down another magical rabbit hole to woo-woo land. These are just a few of the myriad ways that our fallible brains can lead us to the easy path of belief rather than the more difficult one of research. But more about that next week. This concludes part one of The Power of Doubt. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.